In today's show, we're looking at the Milwaukee Bucks, their disappointing season, what it means moving forward, what we can expect out of their players. Michael Bolton.
Thanks, Josh. It's Michael Bolton here, and it's time for another episode of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast. Let's get to it.
Let's get to it, indeed.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com. And you can find me on Twitter, as always, at redrock_bball, on TikTok at redrock_bball, and on Instagram at Locked On Fantasy Basketball. Thank you for making Locked On Fantasy Basketball your first listen every day. We are free. We are available on all platforms. Hope you've enjoyed the last couple of days of NBA draft coverage. We're going to have a couple more days of NBA draft coverage coming after this, and we're going to be sprinkling in draft analysis. We're going to be sprinkling in mock drafts and the final eight team reviews after today's Milwaukee Bucks team review over the coming weeks. We've got Bucks stuff to talk about, so warning.
Let's get it on, Gilly.
All right. We know that it was a disappointing season for Milwaukee. 58-24. Great number. Number one seed in the NBA. Only the fourth best net rating, which should have been, another red flag is the right term, but it should have been like an indication of, hey, maybe this team isn't the overall runaway favorite as many, including myself. Not runaway favorite, but I thought they were favorite, especially considering I thought, well, they put up this many wins, and yes, that net rating is not quite in line with what an overall dominant team usually is, but I thought, hey, they just didn't have Chris Middleton all season. Like, basically, he played 33 games. So I thought, well, getting him back, and then, of course, he was out to the last couple of games of the regular season, and so there was some iffiness there. So it was a little bit like, okay, we'll get him back, and that should all correct that. But it didn't, did it? Yes, having Giannis hurt in the playoffs wasn't great, didn't help them, but he also played in games and they lost. It was just a disappointing exit. Now, at this point, I don't know where Miami is going to be. Obviously, they are, at the moment of me recording this, 3-1 up on the Boston Celtics in the conference finals. This might be an NBA finals team, might be an NBA champion team. They also almost lost in the play-in. So look, gauging what Miami is really hard, honestly. The Bucks, 13th best offense, 4th best defense. Again, they're not fantastic indicators of an absolutely dominant team, pretty clearly. Their best lineup for the season, which was a plus 19.9, according to Clean in the Glass, was Jrue Holiday, Javon Carter, Grayson Allen, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Brook Lopez. So that's obviously the lineup that they played a lot without Chris Middleton. And they would occasionally go with Carter. They'd go with Pat Connaughton in that position at times. Marchand Beauchamp would get some starts occasionally, not that he played a huge amount. But that is, they're probably their most used lineup. And obviously it was their best lineup as of just, yeah, told you, it was their best lineup for the season. But I'm not sure how much that indicates to us as we move forward. Let's look at free agency for this team, because it is a big question mark. They're $28 million over the cap. So, I mean, that's projected cap space according to SpoTrack, but there's a lot of key players, including two starters, that are free agents or can be free agents. Chris Middleton has a player option, which you would think he would decline and become a free agent. Brook Lopez is an unrestricted free agent, and then all their oldies. Jay Crowder, Joe Ingles, Wes Matthews, the Iron Shoulder, Goran Dragic are all unrestricted free agents. Myers Leonard is in that mix as well. And then Javon Carter, who was just in that best lineup we talked about, he's also an unrestricted free agent. So the obviously, they've fired Mike Budenholzer. We know that. That's their step one in the offseason. At this point, they don't have a new coach. I don't know who it's going to be. And I think there will be some impact. Budenholzer is a legendarily good regular season coach. He's been able to turn, and we'll talk about later, to Brook Lopez. Like, he turned Brook Lopez into this Brook Lopez. Brook Lopez wasn't this player. So the replacement of Bud, whoever it is, there will be some sort of impact on this squad. I don't know what it's going to be, but there will be some sort of impact without Budenholzer there on a lot of these players. It might be positive, it might be negative, but there will be an impact. They don't, like, as much as we might say, well, you know, Middleton's 32 and Lopez is 35 and they're going to get big contracts, they don't really have a choice I think they have to bring them back, or they have to make the effort to bring them back. Again, that's what unrestricted free agency is. So Middleton or Lopez might say thanks, but no thanks. We're out of here. But you know, how do you replace them? If they do, or if they don't want to bring them back, you can't really just bring in equivalent players to replace them. And if they do, they're in real trouble. These are two key starters on this team. They can't just say, well, Lopez is gone, we'll start Bobby Portis at center. Doesn't work. Well, Middleton's gone, and then we'll just run Pat Connaughton or Javon Carter, who's also a free agent, out there the whole time. And then their backup wings, Crowder, Ingles, Matthews. These are all old, obviously, and they're well, well below what they were in the past. But they formed a key part in this team. Now, I wouldn't have a problem if Crowder and Ingles and Matthews moved on. I think you can find players, especially at that level in their career, where you can get replacements in. But the big question is going to be those first two guys. And if one of those two leaves, then they are in significant trouble. And if one of the two leaves, maybe they let both go because you know, replacing one of them would be almost impossible. And then maybe you'd want to just create a little bit of extra cap space to get someone else good back. I don't know. I probably wouldn't. I'd probably be looking to bring both of them back. And even if you have to trade them later on, whatever. I just don't think that moving on from those two guys, Middleton and Lopez, would be the best decision. There have been a lot of free agency decisions, one some of the biggest for this squad out of anyone, and that's going to make it interesting. Now, for the draft, there's not a lot happening. They have one pick, pick number 60. According to my mock draft database, that's Muhammad Gaye, who I talked about maybe tomorrow. I can't remember when the draft shows are coming out. I think it's coming out in 2 days' time, or maybe tomorrow, actually, about Muhammad Gaye. Big man from Washington State, who I'm not particularly enamored with as a prospect, and I don't think he'd have really any sort of impact on this team. But that brings us to the question of the day from DLee0924. He says, should we devalue the Bucks stars a little bit, given their management's tendencies to baby the shit out of them? I don't know if Bud being gone fixes that or not. Well, there's a couple of things I'll say there. Babies the shit out of them? I don't think that's true at all. I just don't think it is. I don't know what you're referring to. Giannis, who has a degenerative knee problem, hurt his knee in the NBA Finals, came back too quickly, and that's going to be a problem that plagues him forever. Chris Middleton, again, a knee problem that plagued him all the way back to the beginning of his career, injured it in the playoffs, then had wrist surgery, and then that knee continued to flare up. But Drew Holiday, Brook Lopez, Bobby Portis, everyone else played through everything. These are older players with legitimate knee problems. Holiday had an ankle problem at the start of the season. Now, the one thing I would say about babying them, which again is a stupid term. Sorry, Dele. Like, that's just not what they do. But what they do, and it has paid off in the regular season, is they don't extend their guys big minutes. And that's, I think, where the Budenholzer question comes in. Is because Budenholzer's system and his ability to be a great regular season coach was so high, he was so good at it, that these guys played 32 minutes or 33 minutes or 31 minutes or whatever, and they were able to get by getting stuff out of Javon Carter and Grayson Allen and Bobby Portis. Like resurrecting these guys to be good NBA players. So if Budenholzer's gone, well, which he is, and the player comes in, maybe the new coach comes in, maybe the new coach has to play these guys 34 minutes or 35 minutes because his system's not good enough to coach up these other guys to fill in the gaps, and you've got to run with him a little bit more. So we might get more minutes out of the player. So while Budenholzer was able to resurrect and change the value of players like Portis and Lopez in particular, make them into these great players, the fact that Budenholzer is gone might reduce the value of some of these guys, but maybe the new coach has to play these players more minutes, and that increases value that way. So until we sort of know who the coach is, I'm not going to be making drastic changes based on the coach, but I do think that the most likely scenario is that the Budenholzer replacement is a net positive in terms of the more minutes for these guys versus any negativity in overall production. So I think it ends up being probably a positive. And again, I just vehemently disagree with the fact that they're being babied. I just don't think that's true at all. They're also a team that's been that good that you're preserving significant injuries or long-term degenerative type issues like Middleton's knee and Giannis's knee is the right thing to do. Again, you can't talk about babying them when Brook Lopez had back surgery last season, missed all year, and then played basically every single game this season at 35 years of age. If they were into babying, he wouldn't have done any of that. But he played huge minutes and huge amount of games and was massive. 1 year off back surgery. So again, I think that sometimes we can get a little bit over emotional about players resting and sitting and talking about them being soft when it just, I don't believe is true. Today's episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. For a championship team, it's all about making sure every player is a perfect fit. It's the same when it comes to your vehicle. Every part needs to fit just right. So the next time you need parts and accessories, head to eBay Motors. With eBay Guaranteed Fit, you can be sure every part you need fits right the first time around. Just add your ride to My Garage and look for the green check to know the part will fit or your money back. Because just like in sports, confidence is the name of the game when you shop on eBay Motors. And with over 122 million parts to choose from, you'll be back in the game in no time. After all, it's easy to bring home a win when the right parts are guaranteed. Get the right parts, the right fit, and the right prices on ebaymotors.com. Let's ride.
Broncos country, let's ride.
eBay Guaranteed Fit only available to US customers, eligible items only, and exclusions apply. All right, that'll bring us into the individual players. Let's talk about Drew Holiday, who was a guy that I was a bit interested in. ADP of 43, I thought that doesn't seem right. Seems a little low. I'd be very interested in him in the third round. And if I did take him in the third round, which I did in some spots, it worked out. He was the 27th ranked player in category leagues, 41st in points leagues. He is 33. He played 33 minutes a night, 67 games. He had an ankle problem early in the season, but basically played every game after that. 25 usage, 19 points, 5 rebounds, 7.5 assists, 1.2 steals, 48, 38, 86. These are all elite numbers. He was great. His EPM, 95th percentile. He was 7th in the entire NBA in Darko at a plus 4.4. Look at that Darko graph, just basically getting better and better. It is going to drop. He's 33. It is going to fall off. And I wouldn't be shocked to see a decent enough drop from Drew next season. But everything about him this season was unbelievable. 97th percentile and estimated win. So where would the drop most likely come? I think with this sort of a player, like defensively, like he's still really, really good, but just losing a little bit of a step, I think the 48 dropping to 45% field goal percentage is a legitimate fear for me, that as he gets a little bit older, he's had inconsistency problems with his three-point shooting, that could drop. Yeah, the 5 rebounds turns into 4, the 7.5 assists turn into 6.5. That's probably not as likely, but that's where it probably drops off. 24.5 usage might become 22.5, because especially if Middleton is back, and he didn't play at all this season, really. Well, you know, didn't play at all. Played very sparingly. But, of course, if Middleton's gone, then Lopez is gone, then Holiday's able to continue playing with a decent high usage. So it might not come, but he's 33. He is really good. But the thing I'd worry about is some of the shooting. The three-point shooting, the field goal percentage overall, which then ends up dropping your three-pointers made, drops your field goal, your total points. Maybe he plays a minute fewer. Again, new coach might change that, but also a usage drop if Middleton does get brought back. An elite season, one of his best seasons ever, but at this age, you don't think that that's the likely scenario to continue. His fantasy points graph, as you can see, he missed those couple of games early on with the ankle problem, then played basically all the way through there down towards the end of the season. And his EPM graph is just strong. He was just awesome all season. I don't really know what more there is to talk about. Drew, he's probably going to be a third or fourth round pick again in fantasy for this coming season. But again, as you hit towards 33, as a all-star, well, I wouldn't say he's a sub-all-star. He's made 2 all-star games in his career, like 10 years apart. He's solid enough, but something is going to fall away, whether it's injuries, efficiency, burst, defensive ability. Something is going to fall, and it probably has a real chance of happening as soon as this coming season, where he transitions into being this top 30 player into the Mike Conley top 70, top 80 guy. Wouldn't be shocked if that happened. I love Drew, but I think we've got to be realistic with it. Let's talk about a guy that probably defied absolutely 100% definitely defied the aging curve. And that is Brook Lopez, who missed basically all of the season before. And again, it's another example of, and this is part of it, and I probably was in on this a little bit, but he had an ADP of 121, Brook Lopez. Finished up 37th in category leagues, 19th in totals. Obviously not as good in points leagues, 66th in points leagues, 39th in totals, but he didn't play. He had back surgery. And I was like, well, he's 34 years of age. He's coming off back surgery. I'm just not interested. I just don't, like, he's fine. I don't think anybody in their right mind could have said, all right, the upside here for Brook Lopez is a top 40 player. The upside for Brook Lopez is playing 78 out of 82 games. Not one person would have thought that made sense. Not only is he older, but he was coming off that back surgery. And had sort of declined a little bit in production anyway. Maybe he could have been a top 90 player. Maybe. But this is just not expected. And again, it goes back to the injury stuff. And he's been one of the poster childs for it. He played 82 games for 3 years in a row. Then he missed like 2 out of the next 3 seasons. Then came back and played. Then missed all of last season. And back again playing big minutes. It's all over the place. Injuries are fluky. They're random. And that, you know, we sometimes read too much into that. I was probably more interested in what had happened the 2 years prior with him and the age and the production. I didn't think he'd be playing 30 minutes a night. Brook Lopez, I thought we'd be getting on, but there'd be a little bit of split there with Bobby Portis. And I just didn't see any of this coming. Got it wrong, clearly. But I think as a general process thing, a 34-year-old big man coming off back surgery, I'm not going to be saying, right, Brook Lopez is the example here, so we've got top 40 stuff coming. It's just not a realistic thing. 19 usage for him, 16 points, 2.5 blocks, 6.7 rebounds. So I guess the question is, how did Lopez become this good? How was he able to step forward and become this player? Well, this is also the thing we've got to look at. It's a one category thing. It's blocks. His, you know, points and threes are league average. His rebounds are marginally above league average. His assists and steals are well below league average. His field goal percentage is marginally above. His free throws is right on league average. He just had a Z score of 2.87 in blocks. It's a one category boost. Nothing else was a huge negative, which is all really solid. Having that real positive, real like just average, solid safeness in the other categories, and then one just blowing through the roof with the blocks. But he averaged the year before 1.2 blocks. The year before that, 1.5 blocks and played 27 minutes. This is why it was not expected. Even in healthy seasons, 27 minutes, 27 minutes, 23 minutes last season. This year, 31 minutes with 2.5 blocks, like out of nowhere. That is, again, if we're looking at what Brook Lopez does, I think there is a risk that he will get overdrafted. Like, I will not touch him in the top 50. And again, that totals number, people will look at that and say, well, yeah, he was actually a second-round player on over the course of the season, and they will be really excited by that. And if you look at the straight 9-cat totals, he was 10th. 10th. And another reason why I think that is just a horrible way to view players, because under no circumstance would you draft Brook Lopez in round 1 or probably round 2, and I don't think you should do it in round 3. So what does it tell you? It doesn't tell you anything. Like, you just don't do that. You just don't pick him in that area. And it's going to be a great transition to talking about the player we're going to talk about after this as well. There's no denying that he was awesome. 53% shooting was really strong from Brook as well. That went up from the 46 the year before. I think that was almost the best field goal percentage of his career. Again, a lot of career highs happening at age 35. Just not a great predictor of it happening again. EPM, advanced, look, numbers loved him. EPM, estimated wins, 93rd percentile. 56th overall in Darko, 83rd in LeBron. He's just really good. Although, his peak Darko number was higher 3-4 years ago. So despite some of these good numbers, his overall impact did drop from peak Lopez, which makes sense, given where he was those years. But one of his best fantasy seasons ever, pretty clearly. Not his best, but one of his best. His fantasy points graph, you know he's not as good in fantasy points as he is in category 66th in fantasy points because the blocks just don't translate that well. And he's a 16-6 guy, which is not that good. But it's the blocks that really carried everything for Brook Lopez's value, and I'm not a big fan of a real one-category producer when the highest other Z score he had across the other categories was 0.5. So just a marginal, marginal positive. And that was his field goal percentage, which was also a huge surprise. Sounds like I'm shitting on Brook Lopez. He was unbelievably good. He was great. I didn't think he was able to continue at that level, and he did basically all season. And I was wrong on it many, many times. Still, again, if all the information I had, I wouldn't change my mind on it because, yeah, predicting those sort of outlier efforts and production levels is just not a great way to go about things. That will take us into the next player.
Giannis Antetokounmpo.
And it's going to be really, really intriguing to see how people view this guy because when you look at category league rankings, including the way that I rank things without turnovers. He finished 42nd, 67th in totals. But in the minus one rank, which I think when you're playing head-to-head leagues, and even to a degree roto leagues, is the best way to look at it. He was 9th, 11th in totals. He was 4th in points leagues. His ADP was 4. I had absolutely zero hesitation in selecting Giannis at number 2 in drafts. None whatsoever. And is it wrong? Well, you can answer that. If you are watching this on YouTube, in the comment, put in the chat. How wrong was it to have him at two? Because I will push back. And is it me doubling down or defending myself? I guess a little bit. But if I picked him at number two, I know that I was punting free throws. I know that. No problem at all. And whilst there were some declines in other areas, I know what I was getting. I know that I was punting free throws. So he was still a first round player in a punt free throw scenario. Minus one rank, ninth. So I picked him second. He finished ninth. That's not ideal. It's still a first round player. To me, it's not great, but it's still okay. It's not a disaster. But if you go in and you look at other places and you look at contextless rankings, nine cat total numbers, and Giannis is 134th, you'll say, what a disaster. He's just a terrible fantasy player. But again, that would mean that you would tell me that you would prefer to have had Caleb Martin this season, or Malik Monk, or KJ Martin, or Alex Caruso, or Drew Eubanks, who all finished ahead of Giannis in nine cat total numbers, or Jared Vanderbilt. I can go through Royce O'Neal. And if you tell me you prefer those players, well, you're lying, or you're wrong, or you're both. And it's why having context around rankings is hyper important. Was Giannis a bum this season? Of course he wasn't. I didn't think he was in discussion for MVP. That's not true. I had him third, but I'd never once considered him to be first or second. I thought he was a little bit down, and there were declines in his game. The block numbers down at 0.8 and 0.8 steals is really a worry, because that was one of the things that has carried him many, many times, you know, throughout fantasy. We get points, rebounds, assists. You get steals and blocks with great field goal percentage. And you know you're going to get bad turnovers. You know you're going to get bad free throws. You know that. But things declined. His efficiency dropped a little bit, but not much. Not as much as it felt like he'd have all these random, weird, bad field goal percentage games. 21-22, he shot 55.4% from the field. 55.4. This season, he shot 55.3. So literally exactly the same. But it was his free throws that went from 72 to 64, which makes his fantasy rank look way worse. He was a minus 5 Z-score in free throws. But it does not matter at all. It doesn't mean a single thing in a head-to-head league if that happened. He could have shot 1% from the free throw line, and it doesn't really matter. In Roto, yeah, it is a problem. But you could also just done a one-category punt in Roto, which is possible in a competitive league, and you knew that. The problem was the 1.1 steals going to 0.8, the 1.4 blocks going to 0.8. They're problems. But his assists were the same, his rebounds were the same, and he scored more points. So for all of the criticisms of Giannis, of him being the 130th ranked player, it's bullshit. I don't know where he's going to get drafted next season. I think that there will be people in some leagues that do let him slip to the second round, which will be foolish. But I don't think I'm going to pick him at round two, because while I can defend some of the production, the lack of defensive stuff is a worry. He's never playing 70 games again in a season. His knee problem is that it is serious. It is significant. He won't play 70 games again. I am confident in that. So I think we've got to factor that in. And he's only 28, so he's not super old, but you know, that the knee thing's real. He shot 28% from three. I'm not banking on that getting better. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. Impact-wise, he's ridiculous. 98th percentile EPM, third overall in Darko at 4.9. But you can see even on the Darko graph that his impact did drop. He wasn't as good this season as the year before. That is very clear. Very clear. His LeBron was 99th percentile. His fantasy points graph, you can see all the gaps in there of those single and two games missed with his knee, which will continue to happen every year. His knee is not getting better. There are going to be concerns with it. And that leads me to some issues with him. And I don't know where I'll have him next season. But what I do know is when you go and if you blindly look at my projections or rankings, he might come out at 24th. And that is under no circumstance the position that I will draft him. Because you have to be understanding the mechanics of rankings and how they work. And this is the number one example of that. His EPM graph, again, pretty strong. The playoffs weren't ideal. He didn't play really well. Obviously, the back injury, all that sort of stuff. But we're talking here more to talk about his fantasy numbers moving forward. Let's talk about Chrissy Middleton. Really bad season. No doubt about that. In ADP of 54, I would have had no hesitation. Look, did I get a lot of the Bucks wrong for fantasy this year? Yeah, I got Drew right. But I was off on Lopez. I was probably a little bit down on Giannis. And I was definitely off on Middleton, right? Definitely got that wrong. because my understanding was that he was going to miss the first 1 to 2 weeks of the season with his wrist surgery. I knew that. But I didn't think there'd be any problem with him coming back and ramping up to 4 minutes really quickly. And this is probably a top 40 player who you can get at 55, maybe at 60, and be happy with it. But no, that didn't happen. 119th in per game numbers, 107th in points leagues. He's 32. He played only 33 games and only 24 minutes a game. Because you'll see it when I put up the fantasy points graph. He came back from the wrist injury and they worked his way in and then he hurt his knee. And then that's where the problems arose. Is that that knee, which he had injured in the playoffs previously and was fully okay apparently heading into the year, just flared up. And this is a knee problem he had. He might have even had it back in college. And it flared up. In fact, I'll drop the fantasy points graph now and you can see just all the gaps there. So he came back from that wrist injury there early November and then the knee. And that's just games on and off all the way through. And towards the end, he was getting back to his 30 minutes a night. But because they were playing so well, because he had this knee problem, they didn't have to force him into anywhere near the minutes that he needed. So he averaged 15 points. And he didn't shoot well either. So combine missed games, low minutes, bad shooting. That's why you got all those bad numbers. Played 24 minutes, he averaged only 0.7 steals. He did have 5 assists, he had 15 points and 32% shooting. His impact stuff was actually okay. 2.5 in EPM, that's 90th percentile, 51st in Darko. Look, they're okay numbers. And I think there is a huge opportunity for him to be a steal in drafts next season. Now, I don't know where he's going to go, but based on the experience this season, if he ended up in the 80s or 90s, I wouldn't be totally shocked. I look at that 24 minutes as an absolute outlier. Yes, the knee is a real concern, right? I am really concerned about how much time that's going to cause him to miss. But I would say that everything would say he's playing more than 33 games and more than 24 minutes and probably shooting more than 31% from three. So you set all those things come back up and he could very easily be a top 60, top 65 guy, probably not ever reaching that top 40 peak that he had. But I do think there will be some negative pushback against Middleton based on this last season. It was frustrating, but I don't think that this is the end of his career or end of him being a useful fantasy player. If you look at his EPM graph, you'll see all those blue dots of missed games, but how his impact rose and rose and rose as the season went on, and he was back to being really, really good at the end of the year. The problem just was injuries and missed time and the slow ramp up of his minutes to get back. And that knee is a problem, which has been there for a long period of his career. And it might still be there keeping him in the Giannis maybe play 65 games type scenario. That is a little bit of a worry. Let's go to Punch Bob. Bobby Portis, a guy that is occasionally liked in fantasy, but not someone that I flock to. Had an ADP of 103. In large part, I believe, due to the fact that the season before Lopez missed all the games. So Portis's numbers were way bigger. This season, he still played 26 minutes. He was 120th on a per-game basis, 102nd on points leagues. He's 28. I just don't see... The upside for him requires Lopez or Giannis to be out for extended periods of time. He is going to score and get rebounds. This is what Bobby Portis does. 21 usage, 26 minutes, 14 and 9.5. They're great. 1.4 threes. But part of my problem with Bobby Portis as a real player and why he can struggle at times to get the role that you might think that he deserves. Well, just play Giannis at the 3 and Portis at the 4 and Lopez at the 5 is definitely a comment I've heard from people. Is the fact that the defense is bad. 0.2 blocks per game. Now that is obviously trending to the very, very low side, but it's embarrassingly low. Like, that's really bad. 0.4 steals. Assists. He never gets them. He's a points and rebounds. He's John Collins, but worse at defense. Way worse at defense. Shot 37% from three. He's a really good shooter. 50% from the field. But yeah, the impact metric stuff was okay. Darko's got him at 119th at plus 0.3. 53rd in EPM. Like, they're okay. But he's not a player where you go, well, look, double-double machine. He needs to be starting somewhere because that doesn't work out very well. And he is 28 as well, same age as Giannis. These 26 minutes a night that he played is in large part because of some of Giannis's absences and some of Middleton's absences as well there, meaning they can't go that small lineup with Middleton as much, so Portis gets extra playing time there. But there were plenty of times when they got relatively healthy that he'd play 18, 19 minutes a night, especially when Jay Crowder came over, where he was basically just the backup center. Now, how their rotation looks next season, depending on what happens with Crowder and Ingles and Carter and Lopez and Middleton, Like, he might be resigned to a 21-minute a night role again, and I wouldn't be prioritizing him in a 12-team league. There's just, he's an injury replacement sort of a player. Even in 26 minutes a night this year, 120, that's not really good enough for me. You can see he had a little bit of an injury himself in the middle of the season. He's still, yeah, he's a useful offensive player. But to think there's still a guy waiting to break out there, I don't really see that as being true. He had some, again, some solid moments, but defensively is the real problem, and that always leaves him in a marginal role. Let's talk about Grayson Allen, who started basically all season. He was ranked 163rd in category leagues. He was drafted apparently in 5% of leagues at 141. He's 27, played 72 games, 27 minutes, 14 usage, which is comically low. 10 points, 2 threes, 2 assists, a steal, 44%, 40 from 3, 90 from the line. Like elite shooting numbers. But that's it. It's 2 threes a game. And you're not getting anything else out of him. The assists can be okay. But if you look at this team, if they bring everyone back, you go, well, they obviously need to upgrade the position where Grayson Allen is starting. How they do that, I've got no idea. But there's no situation where you go, well, Drew's back and Middleton's there, Giannis is there, Lopez is there. Let's find a way to get more shots for Grayson Allen. It just doesn't happen. A lot of his impact stuff, I think, can be tied to the fact that he's in that starting lineup and the positivity of his shooting. There are some positives in those numbers, absolutely no doubt about that. He's useful enough. But he's just never going to be a guy that really extends himself fantasy-wise. And even this season when players were out, he wasn't able to really elevate significantly. There were times when Javon Carter would do more than him. And you can see on the fantasy points graph, that red line is consistently above the blue line because he just doesn't do anything apart from hit threes. He's okay at it. Well, no, actually, true. He's excellent at hitting threes, and that's useful. But you never want to give big minutes or big roles or big responsibilities to Grayson Allen. His EPM graph, I don't think, tells us a huge amount there. Like, you know, just solidly positive impact. I wouldn't say that Joe Ingles had a solidly positive impact this season. Love Joe, but he's 36 in a few months. He's off the ACL, and you can see that comically large drop on the Darko graph. He had started to decline in that last season in Utah, but this season just didn't look the same. Now, he came back unbelievably fast from the ACL. And if he was 27, I would say, well, man, the fact that he came back so quickly and looked all right, it is a long recovery to get back to your best. It's 24 months usually to get back to your full best. Then by this season, he should be looking pretty good. But he's not. He's 36. So I'm not really buying that. 23 minutes, 12 usage. He hit 41% from three. He averaged 3 assists. That's all really good. But not much else there. Defensively, he was a really good defender in the past. He can't do that anymore. I think they overspent for him in free agency. Whether they could bring him back on a lower contract or not, I don't know. But his presence impacts guys like Grayson Allen and Bobby Portis. Because he's just there, taking up minutes, being useful enough. But he's just never going to, I don't think, move back Joe Ingles to being that player that was a useful fantasy player. And it's, again, one of those things that we talk about when you're a sub-elite player like Joe Ingles was, and you have these fantasy seasons where you're 70th or 60th or 80th, and then you hit age 31, 32, then at some point it's going to fall away. And even before the ACL, it had fallen way off for Ingles. He'd moved to the bench and things had fallen away. And I just don't think that this is just the post-ACL recovery situation. It's age. He's just lost a step. And when you don't have a step to begin with and you lose it, you're in some trouble. You see, he missed all that time to begin the year recovering. And again, was solid enough as a 35-year-old post-ACL coming back insanely fast. But for us in fantasy, it's never coming back to what it was. Let's look at Javon Carter, who I think was relatively surprising this season. I thought they gave him more. Well, they definitely gave him more minutes than I expected. He's an unrestricted free agent. I think they should try to bring him back. He was 221st in category leagues, 150th in totals because he played 81 out of 82 games, 22 minutes, 15 usage, 8 points, 2 threes, 2.5 assists, shot 42% from 3. I still don't actually trust his shooting, even though for the course of the season he shot 42%. That's great. He needs to be able to do that. Defensively, really good. Maybe he should play more minutes. Maybe they can find a way for him to be in there over Grayson Allen. But I still think Allen's a significantly better shooter, even though Grayson has a lower three-point percentage than Javon Carter. So Carter was interesting enough. He plays really hard defense. He had moments of being fantasy useful, but I don't really ever see it transitioning into something where we get excited about him being out there or getting more minutes or anything along those lines. Again, played basically all the way through. Some really, really solid production from from Carter, and you'd occasionally want to stream him in for some steals or for some assists. But overall, he's probably just a backup, I think. Other teams might want to use him. He can be useful, but you never want to rely upon him as a full-time starter. Impact-wise, he did drop as the season went on, which is not great, but he was okay. Let's talk about someone who was definitely not great, and that is old mate Jay Crowder.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
Sat out most of the season because he was sad that Cam Johnson was starting over him. But it wasn't actually that, wasn't it, Jay? Was it your relationship with Monty Williams? No, it wasn't that. It was just something that you never told us what it was or what your problem was and denied every report that came out, where I'm just going to call bullshit on everything. I think you just sooked. And you just had you cracked the sads that you were getting benched for Cam Johnson and you sat out all season and you came across to Milwaukee and you looked like trash. Simple. He was bad. And he was out of their rotation at times because he looked bad. And again, you can say, well, he's rusty. He didn't play all season, so it'll be better next year. He's 33. He is not that good of a player. I thought he was already starting to slip quite a bit in Phoenix last season, and I don't ever see it improving. He's not a good fantasy player anymore. He hasn't been even a solidly useful player for 3 years or so. I don't know why people drafted him in fantasy leagues. Only 2% of leagues, but Jesus Christ, why was any drafted at all? 13 usage, 19 minutes, 7 points. He shot 44% from three, but yeah, I don't trust that at all. 4 rebounds, 0.7 steals. For a guy that is always, you know, seeming to be pushing playoff teams to success, which he was. There's no debating that. We're not pushing them to success, being a part of their success. It's done. He's 33. He's never getting that back. There are other wings in the league who can do what Jay Crowder does better. They're younger, they're more athletic. And again, he's an unrestricted free agent. I think he's going to find a hard time finding a role that suits his opinion of himself, because he obviously thought he was better than what he was. And then he went to Milwaukee and played probably even less than what he would have in Phoenix. Much like the legendary Thomas Bryant trade request. Trade me, I need to play. Cool, 0 minutes. And the Crowder was a little bit like that as well. So it is a self-reckoning for him where he just finds a role. But look, what team wants to play him 27 minutes a night? I don't really know at this point in his career. Inconsistent shooting, inconsistent defense, lack of athleticism dropping off. Obviously some sort of locker room issue because he just sat out half a season. There's got to be something there. And he's not a good fantasy player anyway. So I'm not really expecting huge amounts from him. Again, just didn't play until he was traded to Milwaukee. Didn't play. The EPM stuff for him was actually pretty positive, which is a surprise. I didn't think he was very good at all. And I'll say the same for Pat Connaughton, who was given many opportunities. Now, he also missed the start of the season with a calf injury. He was able to return before Chris Middleton, but didn't really do enough, did he? And by the end of the season, he was out of the rotation. When Crowder was there, Ingles was there, they just weren't playing him. Now, he did come back and play some minutes in the playoffs, but he sort of got excised from the rotation. 265th in category leagues, 24 minutes a night, 7 points, almost 2 threes, shot 34%. Overall efficiency was well done. In the past, he had some really, really strong field goal percentage numbers. They were just disappeared. Now, I expect there's going to be some bounce back in some of his efficiency this season, and the calf issue probably didn't help. But he's just not any sort of a player. Well, even if Middleton was gone and they were going to go into the season with Connaughton as the starter, he's so low upside that I wouldn't bother drafting him in a standard 12-team format. There's just no need for it. His advanced stuff is pretty rough as well. Like, he's not bad. He's an okay rotation guy, and I would have played him over Jay Crowder. I think he's better than Jay Crowder. But there's no starter caliber player here. There's no upside option if Middleton moves on, I don't believe, for Connaughton. And instead, he saw his playing time and his production drop at the end of the season when he was pushed out of the rotation at times. But again, played better in the playoffs and had a role, and he's solid, but he's never going to be a strong fantasy guy. And that brings us to the last player that we're going to talk about. It is their first round draft pick, Marjon Beauchamp from the G League Ignite. Nothing about his fantasy numbers this season are exciting. 412th in category leagues, 404th in points leagues. He shot under 40% from the field, 33% from three. He was 3rd percentile in LeBron, 5th percentile in estimated wins, which is horrible. 465th overall in Darko, and you can see that Darko graph's pretty rough. He had a couple of interesting moments early in the season, but that tapered off. 5 points a game, 0.4 steals in 14 minutes. He's got the size as a wing with maybe some shooting upside, but he also struggled with his shot in the G League, and that was part of the reason he slipped towards the end of the first round. He is an interesting defensive guy, and if they did happen to lose a Javon Carter or Wesley Matthews, I think that they'd be okay with, especially with Matthews, because I think they'd like to put Beauchamp into a rotation role next season. But I don't really view him with any sort of future starter upside, or if he is future starter, not good future starter. Like Grayson Allen's a starter. Could Beauchamp become a starter like that? Not the same player, obviously, but that sort of quality or caliber of player, maybe. Defensively is there, but I don't really see... Nothing from this season persuaded me to like him huge amounts compared to where I was from him in the G League. It's sort of the same player where the shot's a little bit iffy. Maybe there's some defensive stuff, but nothing massively stood out to me with Beauchamp. Again, we didn't see huge amounts of him play. He did get a couple of starts early on. He had one decent enough fantasy game there, or a couple of decent ones early on in the season, but that did drop off as the season went on, and he did lose minutes as players returned from injury. But he's a guy that, again, I think will have more opportunity next season, but I'm not particularly excited for that opportunity. You can see his EPM graph there, so lots of blue dots in the middle. He's very sort of much in and out of rotations. Hard to be too critical of his production as a rookie. I just don't see any sort of sky-high opportunity for him or sky-high potential or anything like that. And that will do it for me today. Don't forget to follow this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and on the Odyssey app. And on YouTube, thumb it up and leave your comments down below. Tomorrow, we've got draft analysis stuff going with Tyler Metcalf from No Ceilings NBA. So we're talking to him tomorrow. And I've got some in the can from Chuck from Chucking Darts and Ben Pfeiffer as well coming over the coming days. Follow this podcast. Did I say that already? If not, whatever. Follow it. YouTube, comments. Guys, we're done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.